The LAR Files, the Ultimate Rams Podcast with Nate Lundy.
Welcome into the podcast. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. A lot on tap for the podcast this week as we kick things off. We'll get to our big interview in just a moment. Talk about the big storylines as training camp and the preseason are underway and the start of the regular season is just a couple of weeks away. Plus, we'll do Around the League with the coach, Brian Billick from NFL Network, as we will every week, a chance to visit with the coach. And we'll close things out this week's podcast with Overtime, a six pack of questions. This week's guest, Andrew Siciliano of the NFL Network and DirecTV's Red Zone channel. But it all gets started with the big interview next.
The big interview.
It's time for our big interview. Let's talk about the Rams. I'm still getting used to calling them the Los Angeles Rams, but covering the Rams, you find him on Twitter at Mr. Tim Godfrey. Covering the Rams for Pro Football Spot, it is Tim Godfrey. Tim, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
When you look at this team, obviously the biggest topic of discussion right now, other than the move of the squad, is of the top pick of Jared Goff. Everything about him is creating buzz. It's highly anticipated. And obviously anytime you get a number one pick like that, it's expected to be talked about a lot. Case Keenum right now, likely to be the starter at the beginning of the season. Do you still believe that? And at what point do you think we may see Jared Goff?
Yeah, I do believe it's opening day and probably through the rest of the season, Case Keenum is going to be the starting quarterback for the Los Angeles Rams. You know, there are reports out of camp that say that Keenum is far ahead of Jared Goff, and I think that's to be expected. What's not to be expected, or probably what people weren't expecting, was for it to take as long. You know, people were saying Keenum will be in for a month, then Goff will take over. But, you know, Goff has a lot on his plate. He has to learn an entire NFL offense. He has to learn what it means to be an NFL starting quarterback. He just learned how to start a huddle this year. He didn't have to do that at Cal. It was a hurry-up offense. It was a very simple offense where all he had to do was pretty much throw it deep and throw it to the available receiver, which he was very good at doing. But there are a lot of obstacles in his way before we even talk about him starting in an NFL game. But I think for right now, Case Keenum being the quarterback for the Rams, I think they'll be pretty good for the most part.
When you look at this, it doesn't matter whether we're talking about a veteran quarterback or somebody starting their first game. Sometimes the best friend of a quarterback is a good running game. Talk about Todd Gurley and what the expectations are for him, and frankly, how is he handling it?
Well, the Rams are certainly blessed to have Todd Gurley. You know, if anyone is keeping up with the Rams, we know that Gurley's debut in the preseason has been very light, as it should be. Rams should not be risking the chance of Gurley getting injured because, in my opinion, Gurley is about 80% of that offense. The offense goes through Gurley. And all he has to do is show up. He doesn't have to go through the obstacles that other running backs or even young guys like Jared Goff has. And I also think that the running game, even without Gurley, is in a much better position than it has been in maybe the last 2-3 years. Behind the starting running back has always been Benny Cunningham and another guy who could never climb up the depth chart. This year, we're seeing a new Benny Cunningham, and we're seeing guys like Malcolm Brown, who last year was on the practice squad until the very end of the season of 2015. Now all of a sudden he's busting through tackles and making leaps and making catches. Now, granted, we're in the preseason, but for the running game, from what it looks like, the Rams are set from top to bottom.
On the receiving side of things, I know that Brian Quick got called out by Jeff Fisher for being inconsistent. What's your take on this wide receiving core? Are they still waiting for somebody to step up? Is this just a time where they need to wait until they can get either the right free agent or the right draft pick? What about the receivers?
Well, unfortunately for the Rams offense, that's where things take a nosedive. Wide receiver is definitely the worst part of this offense, and like you said before, you know, this is a group that is just looking for someone to step up and take that leading receiver role. The Rams have not had a 1,000-yard receiver since 2007, and that was Torrey Holt. And he, you know, we're long gone from that situation. The front runner for that leadership role, people think Kenny Britt. I think Kenny Britt. It was supposed to be Kenny Britt last season, but things didn't really come to fruition on that end. With Brian Quick, it's very disappointing. This is probably the only guy who I've seen get such a big opportunity. The opportunity has lasted 5 years. They signed him in the offseason, this offseason, on a one-year deal, basically a one-year prove-it deal, because it was a one-year, $1.5 million contract. And in practice, you know, he's shown some flashes, but once you get the rubber to the road, Quick just can't seem to reel him in. He had some good catches right off the bat in the first and second preseason game, but after that, I mean, it was drops, and they're easy drops. When I was doing a tape review of the Chiefs versus Rams game, there was a slant route that Quick ran. It hit him right in the chest, hit him right in the hands. The nearest defender was maybe 3-4 yards away. They had created this big bubble, and he just couldn't reel it in. He dropped it. He fumbled. So if anyone is expecting to see the Rams throw the ball a lot this year, they're going to be gravely disappointed. And one more thing, Taylon Austin was asked recently, you know, are you going to see your opportunities to catch the ball? Are you going to see those rise? Because he had 600 yards receiving last year, his best year, 600 or something like that. And he said, no. You know, it's going to be running through Gurley, and that's exactly right. The Rams' offense is going to be run first, and that's not so much because that's their best asset, but because that's their necessity. That's all they have.
When you look at this team then, obviously when you know you've got some deficiencies there on offense, you've got an unproven rookie quarterback, if he were to play, et cetera, it means you got to look on the defensive side of things, which has been promising for this team. What's your take right now on defense, and where are some of the strengths, some of the shining stars?
Well, let me start by saying that, you know, the 1 year the Rams take a first-round quarterback where they show that they're committed to getting that missing piece that people have been saying that they've been missing for the past 2 to 3 years, you know, they're a quarterback away. That's what people say. The year that they do that is when their defense starts to kind of lose its steam. I still believe that their defensive line is one of the best in the NFL. You know, you have Aaron Donald, who's an absolute monster in the middle. He has freakish strength, freakish speed, and he's just hungry. You know, there's nothing but fighting that guy. You have Robert Quinn and William Hayes as the bookend defensive ends. But after them, you know, it's a little troubling, especially at cornerback. You know, the big story of the offseason was Trumaine Johnson and Janoris Jenkins. Who are the Rams going to try and keep? Because in a perfect world, they keep both, but that's not the world that we're in. Janoris Jenkins left. Trumaine Johnson came back on a franchise tag. And after him, you know, there's not much to look forward to. E.J. Gaines is steadily trying to make his way back into the lineup. He had that injury last year with his ankle that, you know, had sidelined him all of last season. And then after that, you have Marcus Joyner and Cody Sensabaugh, who have been virtually tied for having the worst preseason I have seen from a Rams defensive quarterback. There were several instances where Sensabaugh, despite his best efforts, could not keep a receiver covered. And you have Marcus Joyner, who I don't know if it was miscommunication in his defensive play and miscommunication with the safety, but there were several big catches and touchdown passes that were thrown on his assignment, on his responsibility. So I think the Rams' defense has stepped down quite a bit. They're probably a middle-of-the-pack defense right now, but their best asset, far and away, is their pass rushing.
Based on where this team is at, the fact that it just moved, it's in a new city, you know, the division it's in, is Jeff Fisher safe through this season regardless of what happens, or could you see a scenario where a performance costs him his job?
You know, that's very tough to say. In fact, I think it would be easier to explain gravity to a pig than be able to predict something like that. I mean, Jeff Fisher has had the ceiling of 7-9, which as we heard recently, isn't acceptable. It's some BS in his opinion. But, you know, the Rams are currently trying to extend the contracts of both Jeff Fisher and Les Snead. Nothing has been set in stone. It's all talk right now. They're still trying to get the deals underway. So until I see pen to paper, I would have to believe that anything is possible. But this franchise has definitely favored Jeff Fisher more so than any other head coach. You know, I think unless the Rams have an 0-16 season or a 2-14 season, which I don't think that they will, I think it's safe to say that Jeff Fisher is going to be the head coach of the team in 2017.
Great coverage of the Rams. You find his stuff at Pro Football Spot. He's on Twitter at Mr. Tim Godfrey. Tim Godfrey, been our guest to talk Rams here on The Big Interview. Tim, appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Coming up, the coach, Brian Billick, as we go around the league.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the league, and as we will do each week throughout the season, we're joined from the NFL Network. You find him on Twitter at Coach Billick. It is the coach, Brian Billick. And first of all, Coach, how's your offseason been?
It's been great. As usual, too short, but it's time for football, so we'll crank this thing up.
It always feels like it's too short. Let's talk about some of the stories from the offseason and even from training camp and beyond. A few interesting quarterback moves, so let's start here. First of all, what's your assessment of the Broncos' quarterback situation and the decision Gary Kubiak's having to make?
Well, anytime you take a quarterback in the first round, obviously L.A. doing it with Jared Goff and then Carson Wentz in Philadelphia, and then Paxton Lynch in Denver. At some point, you've got to know these guys are going to start. I mean, since the, Aaron Rodgers did it in 2005, and he's the poster child for those that say, okay, you shouldn't start a quarterback, let him sit in and learn behind somebody else. Well, with all due respect, he sat in behind Brett Favre. That's a Hall of Famer. And Carson Wentz and Jared Goff and Paxton Lynch, they're not sitting behind Hall of Fame. In my opinion, they ought to play. And it sounds like Paxton Lynch, particularly with a team like Denver, that's going to pack a great defense. They anticipate running the ball well. Why would you not start him?
And then when you go from Denver, let's stay in the West. Let's go to the NFC West. What about what Chip Kelly is dealing with in San Francisco with Gabbert, with Kaepernick? It feels like it's a very odd situation that he's trying to decide who his quarterback for 2016 is going to be.
Yeah, you know, look, the old adage is if you have two or three quarterbacks, you have no quarterback. I mean, it should be very clear-cut. And he may have already decided. I think there's still an upside for Colin Kaepernick. We'll see how he fits into the Chip Kelly system. You'd think it would be fabulous. Blaine Gabbert, I think we've seen, is a backup, a good, solid backup in this league. I don't know that you're going to be a championship-caliber club. Colin Kaepernick still has a little of that upside. But the hard thing will be that this roster is not a great roster right now. It's not a great defense. You know, you hope that Carlos Hyde can stay healthy and run the ball. The receiving core, they have some potential there, but I don't know they have the absolute go-to guy, and that includes their tight ends. Vance McDonald is kind of pedestrian. So I think the group that he's going to be working with, along with the defense that's clearly having to rebuild, I think there's going to be some challenges for Chip in San Francisco.
What about a positive quarterback story, at least from what we've seen in the preseason so far, and that's Robert Griffin III in Cleveland. A lot of folks feel like maybe we're starting to see the RG3 that we saw at the very beginning in Washington.
Well, you hope so, because obviously this guy has a lot of talent. If he can stay healthy, and that's a big if, that's something obviously everybody's going to watch to see, because they keep saying, we're going to let Robert Griffin be Robert Griffin. Well, when Robert Griffin was Robert Griffin, when he was RG3, he got hurt. And so I'm looking for a guy that can he beat you from the pocket? Yeah, can he do the things outside? He's got potentially, and I'm hesitant to use that word because the old adage is in coaching, son, your potential is going to get me fired. But if there's some potential, it looks like Terrell Pryor has some upside in terms of the receiver. If indeed Josh Gordon can come back and be solid for them, if they can get that running game cranked up, then that's going to complement RG3 and give them a chance, obviously, to piece this thing together. And I don't think anybody expects them to be a playoff team, but they can be a good, solid, competitive team.
The buzz down in Dallas is, of course, all about Dak Prescott, and we know it's a limited sample size of preseason, but what were your thoughts on Prescott going into the draft, and are they coming to fruition?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the Dak Prescott, this is different than the first-round conversation, which is good, because for the Dallas Cowboys, obviously with Tony Romo, it's all about keeping Tony Romo healthy. But if you can get and reach down into the fourth round like they did for Dak Prescott, this is a talented guy. A lot of people will equate his game a little bit in terms of Russell Wilson. Now, that, you say that, people go, oh, boy, well, this guy needs to be your starter. I'm just saying that he's a later draft choice that's showing some potential. I did see an interesting comment from him in talking about how he feels like he's ready for whatever the NFL is going to throw at him, whether it's a vanilla defense or, as he said, a rocky road defense. I think I'm ready. Well, let's hold on that. I prefer to have a rookie quarterback know just enough to be afraid, because I love the bravado, but the difference that he'll see in the regular season versus the preseason, notwithstanding Tony Romo staying healthy. But obviously for Dallas, they've got the best of both worlds. If indeed he can be a serviceable backup, get a young quarterback that they can develop, you couldn't ask for more than your backup quarter, in your backup quarter position.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. You find him on Twitter, at Coach Billick, as we go around the league. Coach, let's talk about a couple of coaching changes. How do you think the young Adam Gase, and I always wind up feeling older when I see a head coach who's 30, but nonetheless, a young Adam Gase, how do you think he'll do in Miami?
Well, he's got it set up to do very well. I mean, he was brought in. He's the current quarterback whisperer. So he's going to come in, and Tannehill is going to be that next protege, that next quarterback. Indeed, can he transform this guy who's had a solid beginning in his career? That's how it's going to be judged, because the expectations in Miami are very high in terms of what they think they can do. Obviously, in that division, it's all about, can you supplant New England? I don't know if they're good enough to do that. So the next question is, are they good enough to be a wild card team? And that's a tall order in the AFC.
What about Doug Peterson in Philadelphia? What's your assessment of Peterson?
Well, he certainly brings the right pedigree in terms of having been a former player, being a part of successful teams with Andy Reid. He's certainly in a familiar situation. Let's go back and remember that Doug Peterson was brought in to be the quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles in Andy Reid's first year in 1999 to basically hold down the spot until Donovan McNabb could eventually take it over, which he did middle to late season. Now, that was a 5-11 team. He now is sitting on a team where he's got a couple quarterbacks, more than a couple. Sam Bradford, obviously, they paid all that money to. They went out and moved up and used a lot of assets to go get Carson Wentz. But I was up at their training camp, early in training camp, and had a chance to visit with Coach Peterson. And he and Howie Roseman, the general manager, seemed wholly committed to Carson Wentz not playing this year. Now, I don't know that that's going to happen. As I said, since Aaron Rodgers took over or was drafted back in 2005, 29 quarterbacks have been taken in the first round, and only a handful have not played in the first year. Only four, to be exact: Aaron Rodgers, Jason Campbell, Grady Quinn, and Jake Locker. Now, that's not an impressive list outside of Rodgers. So those that want to make the camp, well, maybe you shouldn't play your quarterback in the first year, hasn't turned out real well. So we're going to find out if Doug Peterson wants to emulate what he did for the Philadelphia Eagles and just kind of be a placeholder until they can get Carson Wentz into the starting lineup.
As you look at the NFL over the course of the last year, certainly the last 8 or 9 months, Coach, we've seen, whether it's the Al Jazeera report, we've seen Deflategate, we've seen a number of things going on. Are we in jeopardy at all with the league of Roger Goodell, any of the decisions or anything that he's doing? Is it starting to hurt the image of the league when it comes to the fans?
Oh, I don't think so, particularly when we're talking out of both sides of the mouth, when the media wants to say, well, is Roger Goodell too tough? Is he too authoritarian, as the players and the union will say? But by the same token, the NFL can't suffer these black eyes. He's got to get it under control. And that's really what it's going to come down to. We just saw the recent situation in the Olympics with Ryan Lochte, and how it's so often it's not the act itself, it's the cover-up or the lack of taking responsibility for it that is much much more difficult, and that's what Roger Goodell and the league are trying to do, to make sure that these players understand there's going to be an accountability. There's a red line in the sand, and if you cross it, you're going to be held accountable for it.
The coach, Brian Billick, with us. Last one for you, Coach. Give me a team that is going to surprise us, and it could be a team that we think isn't going to be very good, who's going to be better than expected, or a team that has high expectations that's going to underachieve.
Wow. Well, let's go with the positive on that. And you know, when we talk about this and the work I do for the NFL Network, we're at that time of year where everybody wants to talk about that same thing about who are the teams that are going to surprise us? And the criteria is, okay, let's begin with the teams that weren't in the playoffs last year.
Right.
Because obviously you got to see what the Carolina Panthers do. Washington Redskins, who I think are going to be pretty good. Can they get back in the playoffs? But a team that clearly needs to do well for their coach, but I think his position could be pretty good, is Jacksonville. Now they need to be good because obviously Gus Bradley's only got 10 or 11 wins, 12 wins over the last 3 years. But you've got to love, at least in the preseason and certainly in the third year, Blake Bortles seems ready, along with, you know, that great receiving core with Allen Robinson and Allen Hurn. The tight end position is a solid one with Mercedes Lewis. Julius Thomas, who they brought in last year in free agency, could step up and have a big year for them. And obviously in the running game, getting Chris Ivory to go with E.J. Yeldon. They're going to have some offensive weapons. And, of course, Gus Bradley went out and drafted a bunch of defensive guys who they're going to play. They don't have to be great defense, but they got to be better. This could be a team in the AFC South that really could be wide open that makes their way into the playoffs.
And they're benefited, Coach, aren't they, by the division that they're in? Sometimes the geography around you benefits you, that there isn't like a Patriots or a Carolina Panthers type team that they're trying to climb over either.
Yeah, and I regrettably, we always will start the season off and, okay, what coaches are on the hot seat? And well, that division's on the hot seat because every single one of those coaches, whether it be Chuck Pagano in Indianapolis, the expectations with a healthy Ryan Leaf, whether down on Mike Mularkey, all but a first year, you go, how can a first year coach be on the hot seat? Well, let's remember what happened in Jacksonville, where he went 1 year and got fired. The expectations that Marcus Mariota is going to be better, and obviously down in Houston, they went out and spent the big money on a quarterback that the Denver Broncos said they didn't want to spend the money on, and Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler's got to come through for Billy O'Brien, or it could be, you know, could be a problem for him. So I think that whole division of coaches is on a hot.
I say it every single year. You're a smarter football fan if you spend some time with the coach, Brian Billick. He's on Twitter, at Coach Billick. Coach, look forward to visiting with you again throughout the season. Thanks for the time.
Sounds great. It'll be fun.
Coming up next, it will be time for Overtime, a six-pack of questions, rapid-fire style, with the NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Overtime is next.
Overtime.
It is time for overtime. That means we got a six-pack of questions, because what else do you do during overtime but make another trip to the bar and grab a six-pack so that you can enjoy it? This week, our guest in overtime from the NFL Network is Andrew Siciliano. Andrew, how are you?
Nate, how are you?
I'm doing very well, my friend. You ready for a six-pack of questions here?
Are they alcohol-free?
Well, they are alcohol-free, just in case you've got to go in front of the camera here in a moment.
Good.
All right.
Double check. Go ahead.
Let's start here. Question number one. Which rookie quarterback is going to start first, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, or Paxton Lynch?
Paxton Lynch.
And why is that?
Jared Goff might be my other answer. I think it no doubt Case Keenum is going to be the starting quarterback for the Rams out of the gate. They have two difficult division games right out of the gate, so you're not going to see Goff, I don't think, in September. Paxton Lynch, as of our taping, Nate, still has a shot, if he performs well in week 3 of the preseason, to get the starting job, as absurd as that sounded a couple of weeks ago. And I think Paxton Lynch very well could be the 2 behind Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian, somewhat unproven. That would put Paxton Lynch in a great position.
All right. Question number 2. Do you think Ezekiel Elliott is going to break Tony Dorsett's 1977 rookie rushing record for the Cowboys of 1,007 yards?
Yes.
In what week?
Well, you need to average 66 yards, roughly, I believe, or 65 or something like that, a week to get to 1,000. So do the math. I say he looks like a 1,200-yard back.
Yeah, I think so, too. I'm with you on that one. All right, question number three. Do you think that Tom Brady's suspension is going to mean the end of the Patriots' run at the top of the AFC East?
Absolutely not. Call me except in December when they win the division.
All right, question number four. Will this intriguing Jacksonville Jaguars team, led by a defense they've been rebuilding, do you think they make the playoffs?
I'm going to say no, but I'm going to say they make a run for it and look like a 9-7 team. I'm still not entirely sold, but I'm excited. When the schedule came out in April, I said Green Bay on the road week one at Jacksonville was your sneaky good game of September.
As you look at Cleveland, are we seeing the resurrection of Robert Griffin III?
Yes. The question is, how long will the life be once resurrected? He certainly looks good in the preseason. It is still the preseason. Pump your brakes, Dak Prescott fans. RG3 has proven he could play and win in this league. Can he do it as a dropback passer? Can Hugh Jackson truly, truly give him sustained success? I don't know. I mean, the right side of it off, well, right tackle is an issue. They have some weapons offensively, but blocking and tackling still will be an issue, which doesn't always bode well for the quarterback. Don't be shocked if they are in the number one overall discussion next year. Maybe not at number one, but at least trying to trade up to get a certain quarterback from the ACC, who for the time being shall remain nameless because he's an underclassman.
Let me do a follow-up to question number five. Do you think RG3 ever makes it back to the Pro Bowl?
Well, Teddy Bridgewater made the Pro Bowl last year, and I like Teddy, but he only had like 14 touchdown passes. The way people drop out of the Pro Bowl, I'll never say never for anybody making the Pro Bowl.
All right, last question from our six-pack in overtime with NFL Network's Andrew Siciliano. Do you believe by this time next year we will be referring to the Las Vegas Raiders?
I would say, because it's Vegas and we're playing the odds, that it is slightly better than 50-50 that we will. However, never underestimate the likelihood of an iconic franchise staying home with a last-second deal.
I have said that I'd never want to see a city lose their team, but given that I'm in Denver with the AFC West, it could be kind of fun with the Raiders in Vegas. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Nate, a man of your fame and your needs, you know, I can't imagine that you need a Raiders game to hop on a $79 one-way flight to Vegas.
As long as you're going to meet me there. It's Andrew Siciliano from the NFL Network, part of Overtime with our six-pack of questions for this week. Andrew, thanks.
Yes, sir.
And there you have it. That's how the overtime works, a six-pack of questions for a different analyst each week, and it also wraps up our podcast for this week. Thanks for being a part of it. We'll talk to you soon.
This has been a Sports Joe production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.